Accession number 17626, Mr. Thomas Lawton, reel 22.
Mr. Lawton, reel 22. Had they given you any notice that you were moving shortly?
Oh, yes. They told us about a week before.
Did they tell you why?
Because of the advance of Russians. And we said, aye, what about the advance of Americans? Actually, while we've been pushed through there at Regensburg, I jumped out the columns. I went into a big allotment and took two bunches of rhubarb off two lasses. And after the war, I wrote to the Bürgermeister of Regensburg, apologising. I had no idea who they were, but I felt so low. And it was there where we started a rumour. We passed the rumours among the civilians. The Americans are 10 kilometres behind. And the guard came to us some days later and said, the Americans are 10. The guards were frightened. Now comes a time when they come to us and say, what should I do with my rifle? What should I do with my machine gun? Throw them away.
Were they old men?
They weren't first class soldiers. They were the older type of man. But old, maybe 45 or something, I think. Anyhow, they began to ask, have you got any spare uniforms? To change your uniform. So wherever we could, we scraped together a pair of battle dress blouses and paper, and gave them to the worst guards we had. And the other guards were very annoyed. Said, well, he was a bad man. We said, wait, just wait. And then, of course, it happened. When I met the Americans, you see, oh, I do rough. By God, they treat them rough. Tore their medals off and tore their badges off. And the Germans never did that with us. I remember once somebody tore medals off an old soldier, and there was an officer there, and you pucker it in after and give them back. Never do that. You see, difficult to understand this man, the German. Anyhow, when the Yanks did meet up with us eventually, said, what's he been like? You know, bastard. Okay. And by the way, he was one of the worst guards we ever had. Whoa, that Englishman. That's not an Englishman, that's a German in English uniform. And that's the one, that's, whoa. Now the decent guards knew why we'd given them that thing. But an interesting thing here, Harry, as we were marching along, and made mile after mile after mile, we came across some people who had actually come from Budapest. Isn't that funny? And were very genteel people, ladies and gentlemen, families. And they were living in railway wagons, railway trucks. They didn't have a thing. Now, among us, there were some men had bits of chocolate that they saved up for months and months. And wherever they go, they were given these people. And there was one Pakistani wearing British uniform. And he had a block of chocolate in his hand. He's holding up. One to barter. Where all the kids were going mad, you know, the women were going mad. And he was the luckiest man alive to be alive. There was about five Australians, got a hold of him. They took his chocolate off him and they broke it up. And they give it to the kids, and they give him such a bloody battle. And what they were saying was, you are wearing a British uniform. We are wearing a British uniform, all the Australians. Eh? We try to use pride. You bloody battle was terrible. But as we were marching, we were getting split up into groups. And finally, I had about 350 to 500 men somewhere in Bavaria. We hauled into where there was a farm, and there was out on the farm. But there's one special place we came to that farm. Oh, I'll tell you a story. On one of the journeys, a farmer came to me, Jack Tingle, and he says, will you write a letter for me to the American general to say I've been a good man to you, and I'll give you some eggs and bacon. So we did. So what a good man he'd been. He didn't read English. He didn't speak English. What a good man he'd been, a rotten pig. You know, he's an awful old sod, this. He never give anybody anything but bad language. And we say to ourselves on the bottom, you know, Adolf Hitler or something like that. But anyway, eventually I arrived on a farm that had these men, and the only people in the farmhouse were an idiot. First time I ever saw an idiot, a real idiot. Hands that big, hanging on his arms, and a nose hooked like that, and always a doddle hanging and crying all the time. Because he knew the Americans would cut his throat when they came, and the Americans were coming. There was a young man came on the job, a younger man. He showed us his papers, ex-Nazi, being just discharged from hospital. He had his 10 marks to show. Could he stay with us? Yes. Best thing he ever did. He must have known the district. He went out and bought a bag of flour in, and this, something else. Then his wife turned up, and I said, oh. Well, he says, she can stay with me in that little caravan. I said, no, she cannot. I says, remember, these men have been, never seen a woman for 3 or 5 years. Yes, but they are Englishmen. I says, yes, but I says, you think yourself you're lucky, because if they get you, they'll have a good deal or not. But I says, you can sleep in the farmhouse with the old people. They wanted me to sleep there. I said, no. I'll sleep out in the barn, same as the men. And time went on, and time went on, and things happened and happened. And one day I was sitting, and I've just come to it here. I was sitting and looking over the white plains in the farthest distance of the Bavarian Alps, at which what I thought were just boulders of stone. Wondering what and how and when anything could happen there. The men I had were hungry and fed up. There were two men ran to me and said, Sergeant Major, the Yanks are here. I said, what? The Yanks are here? I've heard that tale before. It's just your reaction, lad, to a lot of daftness. But when I looked again, those boulders were moving towards me. And the two men broke the news. They were not only smoking cigarettes, but offered me one. They had met the Yanks, you see. I could have whooped with excitement. Here were the first friendly fighting men I had seen in 5 years. And what men? Tough, hard-looking, chewing gum, but heavily armed. I would have liked, or I should say battle-weary, but they weren't battle-weary. Dusty, yes, but one of them said he'd never fired a shot for 2 weeks. They just walked across Bavaria, and they would be the only conquering army that ever went over the country and left chocolate, ice cream and cigarettes behind them rather than destruction. But I knew that they were hard men. Then the most beautiful word in any language must be mother and home. Never will I forget the coloured American top sergeant who, in what must be the most beautiful language when spoken correctly, English, said with a broad grin and flashing white teeth, albeit chewing gum, he said with a broad Yankee twang and a Yankee drawl, okay, Tommy, you're on your way home, boy. I never forgot that. And that's what I wrote to the president's wife when she sent me that letter. I told her about these Americans, see? Okay, Tommy, you're on your way home, boy. Now, it so happened...
Can we just spend a little bit more time on the march itself?
Uh-huh.
Because it was over a considerable distance and a long period of time.
A long time.
So, what time would you be assembled, say, on a morning to set off?
You won't. No, you see, you never assembled, you never followed. They might say halt. When they said halt, you just got on and you went to sleep. I tried to get to sleep, see? Then rout could be any time, anywhere. And the whole thing is that even under those conditions, I remember one place where everybody dead, tired, beat, wondering what the hell's going to happen. And there was about 10 men came along the road. And one says, is this the way to Butlins? You see, that. And an Australian standing beside the tree laughed so hard and he was so weak, he slid down the tree and sat on the bottom laughing. Is this the way to Butlins? No, there was nothing organised about it. It was just a case of keep together, don't stray.
And what about meal stops then? Did you have any?
No such
stops?
Thing as meals. I mean, after all said and done, I jumped out the column and saw us told us there was some rhubarb in the garden and took the risk at Regensburg. We were in the Regensburg and Landshut areas then of Bavaria. No.
Was there any pattern to the march or were you wandering here, there and everywhere?
No, just one direct road. No drifting, just one direct road. And we understood we were on our way to Munich. Eh? And we also knew that the Americans were either behind us or in front of us, and the Russians weren't far away. We could hear the guns at night time. We could hear them firing. See?
German civilians that you were meeting, were they frightened?
Yes.
What of them? Was it the Russians or...
Russians.
Particularly?
Russians.
Particularly.
Russians. You see, they knew when the Russians came that they would be brutal. They would repay them for what they did in Russia. One woman said to me, see, we had four or five women eventually on this, in this old farm. And one woman said, about the Americans coming, dead scared. This idiot thought he was going to cut his throat, see? No, man. I says, you're lucky the Americans are coming. It might have been the Russians. And this woman says, it could have been the English. I said, what, after 5 years? Yeah. See, they still had faith that the Englishman was a gentleman, definitely compared to the Russian. So anyway, they get together. I've got about 400 or 500 men. I chase Frenchmen and Poles off that farm. They've been pestering people. I mean, there was nothing to eat, there's nothing to drink. And we chased them off. And that gave me a good name with the German women in the camp. Now, when Patton arrived, nobody would have him, the general. He was on his way to Czechoslovakia. And this is in Bavaria. And he wants to be there this afternoon. Right? You think they knew the roads, the way they went around them. And he said, try and get these men organized. Get some discipline among them. He didn't tell me that personally, but he was telling whoever was there. They want organized, they want some discipline. And I would have liked to have said, hey, have you ever been to prison war 5 years, maybe? Don't eat? Try getting some discipline. And I well remember that period because I had a pair of unclean underpants, which I'd carried for a long time, and I vowed that I would never wear them until I was a free man again. And Patton and them had just gone on their way to Czechoslovakia when I had a dose of dysentery. And I made that direction so I could get a secluded spot, and there was a stinking farm pond. And either I had to go round it or through it. So I decided to go round it, and I dirtied me on the pad before I got there. And I thought, well, that's clever. But the time came when Patton and them went away, they left two medical men with information that you'll get picked up in about a week's time. In the meantime, get yourselves organised.
Where were you now? Were you in any buildings or?
No, the farm, on a farm.
This is the farm that you stayed at for a while?
Huh?
Is this the farm you're talking about that you stayed at for a while?
Yes, we stayed there for a while.
And was that where the Murrigans came to you, when you were on that farm?
That's right. And that's where I drew my pants trying to get across the farm pond. They left two medical men with two ridge tents and all kinds of supplies. And they were two good lads. They even went into the farmhouse among the old farm people and give them bits of things, you see, and proved to the idiot that they wouldn't cut his throat. You know, they give him something. But one day, one of the women who was on the farm, anybody from anywhere, came to me and she says, "Look, the hand was swollen like that." I says, "What happened there?" She says, "The American is a soldat." The American soldier. Whatever they say of the Germans, there's one thing they've got to be. They've got to be clean. And she'd been scrubbing an old floor. And the American came up and he put his heel on her hand and screwed it on the floor. I couldn't believe it. I says, "Come with me." We went to these ridge tents, went in, and what the Yank says, "Oh, hello, Salmager, come in. I haven't got it here, I've got it written down somewhere, but this is what happened." He says, "Anything we can do for you?" I said, "Yes. Have a look at the hand." He says, "God Lord," he says, "what happened here?" I says, "Your comrade there took his heel, placed it right in the centre of that woman's hand, which was washing the floor, and screwed it to the ground." Him. He looked at the woman, and he said, "Sergeant Major, I will never soldier with that man again." And he says, "You, I report you, I make a report out now about this. This is bloody disgraceful." The other soldier started to cry. Yeah. He said, "I don't know what came over us. I don't know what came over me to do that." And he was in such a state. A German woman went up to him and she put her hand on him and she says, "Nicht weinen, don't cry." And she tried to tell him, "I understand, it's not you to blame. It's the people who make war, they're to blame." I couldn't really believe it. She treated him like a mother. And I just thought, there you are. She's been bombed out of house and harbour. He comes and stamps on her hand, and she still has that mother instinct. You know. With the result, of course, that it was very nice after that. And after about a week, we got picked up.
Before we go on to that, coming back to the march again, were you interfered with Allied aircraft whilst you were on the march?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we had these banners, but we were told, remember, they don't believe that. They think the Germans taking advantage of the move. And every now and then we had a scatter off the roads onto the plains. Not as bad as the Stuka bombers used to be in 1940, but they were still there. You could hear a brrrt of the gun. Right? I think they were half... They knew there was a lot of prisoners around, and I think they were half-hearted about the thing. But they never really bothered us much.
You saw no one hurt?
No.
Because of this?
No, but here's the thing. The plains of the foothills of Bavaria, miles and miles of land, right? And all those thousands of men, four men, decide to light a little fire to heat a drop of water or to heat something. And they get some sticks and that, and they manage to get a fire lit. and then I hit it right on top of a landmine. Woof. Four men never got home. Couldn't believe it. Oh, that's nothing. And out there was a mine, and these four men went and lit a fire on top of it. After 5 years, back, never got home.
What happened to men who did drop out because of hunger or weakness, well, or what, illness?
Jack Tingle was a man who dropped out. He had a bad stomach, Jack. He's always having trouble. He got home, all right. He always said a German ambulance picked him up. But at that time, I can't imagine any German ambulance there. Must have been Americans or British. But Jack was picked up, taken to hospital, and he came home.
You must have been living off the land for much of the march.
That's exactly what you're doing. You were living off your inner side. See, a doctor told me when I got home, that I told him about the weight I'd lost. He says, but you see, you were a muscular man. I said, that's right. And he says, your system never had to feed off itself. It fed off the muscle. But he says, some men who were weak to start with, the system fed off the system, and there's no hope for them. So, and everywhere, I was always a little bit lucky. There was somebody on my side.
Did the guards get brutal, trying to keep you working, walking, keeping you going?
Why, you see, they were as much a member of the crowd as we were. They'd throw their arms away, and they were hoping for the best. It was just a big mob moving along a street, moving along a road, until we got split up. And then we became more together, as on that case, where the Americans arrived.
Did you ever work out how far you'd walked?
No. In the beginning in France, we couldn't, because we kept passing the same place every time. But there, you were just there. You weren't interested. We were going to Munich, which we never got there. But we never had any interest in that or so-and-so, that so-and-so. Just went along the road like an animal, dumb, hoping.
Was there any problems with men who were stealing from other men? I mean, there was hunger there, and some men had some food and some had none.
No, they're not. There'd be very little food at all. Even the German guards, you see, there was nobody supplying them. So that which they had in the haversack when they started out, that was all they had. And they were in the same wagon as we were. They had out. And they knew that it was finished. We would eventually come out of it, but they were still in it.
That must have contributed to keep you going, knowing that it was over, really.
The what?
That must have contributed to keep you going. The fact you knew the war was almost over.
Why, aye. There was no German planes in the air. There was no like that. In Straubing Airport, that's where we were flown from, eventually, everything was smashed up on the ground. It had been a big German airport. Smashed up.
So they rescued you, in effect, at the farm, and obviously the Americans fed you. And then you say they came and took you off. How was that organized? So you got away?
Right. They came with a big troop carrier, wagons, driven by colored men. Okay, on there. So they brought enough wagons to carry us away. All colored drivers. There was a bridge, which usually put one wagon width. And every driver wanted to be first across that bridge. And this was the funny thing, you see, because we saw things happening in Landshut, where a couple of Yanks in a jeep would be chasing an old man with a wheelbarrow, you see. And we were saying, they shouldn't do that, you know. We saw Yankees, like a is he's going to give the jelly a tab.
Yeah. And pulling it away. Now, you didn't like seeing that, you said.
No. No. No one. Landshut was quite a town. Later on, when we were, before we got lifted by the Americans, you know, we were like in a camp. And the man said to me, he says, "You want 500 marks? I said, "Aye." I said, "I know bloody good." "Oh, yeah." He says, "You get 11 marks to the pound." Deutschmarks, Reichmarks, not Gefangengeld. He had a suitcase full of German marks.
This was an American, was it?
No, English man. I said, "Where'd you get them?" Well, he says, "Out of a bank." So I got them now. "Show me another bag." I said, "What are they?" He says, "Diamonds." I said, "Yeah." He says he was standing when an American bookmaker come up to him and he said, "Hey, buddy, let's go in there. I've always wanted to rob a bank, and here's a bank." Went in, and he says, "That young says," he pointed to a safe or something. He opened the safe. He says, "Look at them." He says, "I said, they're brilliance. Just brilliance." "No," the young says, "no, they're diamonds." He had a bag like that. There's a man who'd come home, a wealthy man. He just was at the right place at the right time. He says, "I slept in the best hotels and got sick of them and gone to another. The Germans couldn't do a thing." But the black nigger knew that bank. It's locked up, there'll be something inside. Sure or not, I don't know, but he definitely had a suitcase full of them. And that's exactly what I got. 11 marks to the pound. Yeah, I had them in. And then they went to your credits.
So you were taken by truck?
Went to an American compound where the boys broke into everything you could get in. And the Yankee police never troubled them. I had about 500 men, and being the sergeant major, I let everybody go forward and get fed before me. And the sergeant in charge of the doors, he says to me, "Sergeant Major, how many men you got?" I said, "Oh, about 500. "Well," he says, "that's not so bad." He says, "About 750 dinners gone." I said, "What?" "I'm going on." And each time you got a meal there and passed by, you were handed a key ration. It was a box, a ration box wasn't that big. After breakfast, after dinner, after tea. Had different things in, cigarettes, a bit of chocolate. And every time these lads went by, they were getting a little box of ration. And I saw them break into this tent, marquee, bring big crates out. They smashed the crates and went and it was all tin stuff. And the Yankee military police were standing watching them. And I says to one of these policemen, "Hey, do you see what they're doing?" "Yeah." "Well," I says, "why don't you stop them?" "Why?" I said, "Because." "Yeah," but he says, "they can't eat the contents. They're in tins." And he says, "Look, the lads were trying to nail the boxes together again." The Yankees had a different way of looking at things, were you? They seemed to use a loaf, turn a blind eye. And that's what happened. And they picked us up, just like a taxi service. We said, "The lot come now, it's strawbean, the lot come now." But they did. And said, "Okay, get on. I've got my load and list yet, 24 men. I've got the list yet." And I was at the back. And one of the Yankees says, "Hey, Major, come forward, help balance this crate." Different story when the RAF picked up next one.